Hey folks, Micah here. We're about to get started, but before we do, I just want to remind you that you can always get show notes for this and every other episode at ChristianTransHumanistPodcast.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for email updates so we can let you know when new shows are released, when new things happen in the Christian transhumanist community, and most importantly, so that we can connect you with other people just like you, exploring questions just like this. Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy the show. All right, so I'm Micah Redding, and I'm here with Catherine Hayhoe, who is an atmospheric scientist, a professor of political science, and director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University. She is also the founder and CEO of Atmos Research and has been named in Christianity Today's 50 Women to Watch and Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People. So thanks, Catherine, for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So it seems like that you spend a large amount of your time trying to convince religious people that climate change is really happening. So how did you get into that? How did you find your way into that particular endeavor?
Well, it's definitely not anything that I ever saw coming. I grew up in the church. I grew up actually in a little denomination called Plymouth Brethren, where my dad was one of the lay preachers. And when I was 9 years old, we moved down to South America, where my parents were missionaries. When I went to the States for grad school, because I was originally Canadian, when I went to the States for grad school, I met my husband, Andrew Farley, in University Christian Fellowship. And at the time, I did not know that his deepest desire was to become a pastor. He was pursuing a PhD in applied linguistics. But now, fast forward 15 years, he's not just a professor. He's also a pastor of a cool church called Church Without Religion. And he has written, I don't know, 8 or 10 popular Christian books, does Christian call-in radio shows. And when we got married, did not think that climate change was real. Now you might say, you know, how did that happen? Well, you know, me coming from Canada and from Colombia, I had never really met anybody who didn't think it was real. And he, growing up in a conservative home here in the United States, he had never met anybody who did think it was real. So we never actually thought to even talk about it until about 6 months after we got married.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So how did that conversation go? Yeah.
A big surprise to both of us. You might say, well, you know, weren't you already doing this? Yes, I had been studying atmospheric science in graduate school. But, you know, when you're kind of down in the weeds, you talk about the weeds. You don't really talk about the big picture. So when it dawned on us that we were on opposite sides of the fence on this, we were really surprised. But at the same time, you know, you're still kind of in the honeymoon phase. And not only do you love the other person, but you also respect them. I mean, I knew what he was like. I knew how smart he was. I knew how what a man of integrity he was. And I knew that he was committed to truth, not just the truth of the scriptures, but the truth of what God's creation is telling us too. So, and hopefully he felt the same way about me. So we were able to have a really good conversation about it, a conversation that lasted for weeks, months, and probably even years. And that was really the beginning of recognizing the connections between our faith and this issue of climate, because I started my career studying astrophysics. I was thinking I was going to be studying stars and galaxies the rest of my life, but When I sort of accidentally took this class on climate science, just when I was finishing my undergrad degree, it dawned on me that here's this huge global problem that disproportionately affects the poor and the weak and the vulnerable, the very people that we as Christians are told to care for. How can I, as a Christian, not commit my time to studying this issue? And it was really my faith and what I believe is the core of the biblical message to us as people living in this world, to be salt and light in the world. That was what convinced me to change my own career path.
Wow. So what is, for people who are skeptical about climate change or who are not convinced, what's the quickest kind of bullet point argument you would make for that? Or how would you approach that?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'd say, how do we know this thing is real? It's not just because temperatures and thermometers and satellites tell us that the planet's warming. We have tens of thousands of lines of evidence from God's own creation telling us sea level's rising, glaciers are melting, animals and plants and birds and insects are moving poleward as it gets warmer. God's creation is telling us this thing is real. And for the first time in the history of this planet, since God created it, it actually is us. Now, one of the biggest arguments I get from Christians is, well, isn't that, aren't you saying that humans are usurping the role of God because God is sovereign, God is the creator, and God is in control? Well, the answer to that isn't in science. The answer is in the Bible. It's right in the first chapter of Genesis, where it says that God gave us humans dominion or responsibility or stewardship, depending on what translation you prefer, gave us that responsibility over every living thing on this planet. We are the ones in charge, just like the people who were given the talents. What do you do with that talent? Do you, do you squander it? Do you bury it in the ground? Or do you get interest from investing it? And then if you follow all the way to the book of Revelation, in the book of Revelation, it says, God will destroy those who destroy the earth. So God has put this incredible planet with all of the living things on this planet in our hands and has given us this responsibility for good or for bad.
Wow. Yeah, so that's interesting. You tie it into, you know, this concept of responsibility. And one of the things that you say on your website is, you know, that you're not just talking about the fact that this is happening, but you're also helping people to prepare for it. And what I find really interesting is to fix it. And yeah. So what, you know, I think that's first of all, I love that from my kind of philosophical perspective and so forth, that fits right in. Like I always want to be like, well, what can we do? And so you're saying that actually doing something about this is not only possible, but it's actually within our kind of role in God's creation.
Yes. And that is so important because, as one man said, when I was giving a talk to some water managers down in Houston the other year, and I was talking all about this whole thing, you know, how do we know this thing is real and what impact is it having on our water resources? Because the reason we care is not, you know, not just because of the polar bear. We care because it's taking all of the natural risks that we face every day. And here in Texas, we face flood and drought and heat and cold and hurricanes and all kinds of stuff all the time. It's taking all of our natural risks and it's putting them on steroids. It's giving them that extra bit of energy that makes our heat waves stronger and our droughts longer and our heavy rainfall more frequent. And that's why we care about it, is because, you know, if we're, you know, well off and we have lots of insurance and we have lots of warning when these things are coming, we can weather the storm. But if we can't afford home insurance, or if we live in a place or a country that doesn't have the resources and the infrastructure that we do in the United States, we aren't just impacted by these weather and climate extremes. We suffer. And that is a whole different ballgame. So what can we do about this? As the gentleman said when I was talking to this group of water managers, he said, you know, when I walked into this room, I wasn't really on board with this whole idea, but everything you said made sense. Here's my problem. I don't want the government telling me how to set my thermostat. And I was like, I agree. I do not want the government telling me that either. So we have this idea that the only solution is the government telling us what to do. And you know, half of the people in the U.S. would probably rather cut off their arm than have the government tell them what to do. Maybe more than half. But the good news is that is not the solution. The solution is already happening here today. And the solution is, number one, transitioning and speeding up the transition to the clean sources of energy from the wind and the sun and the tides that God has given us in abundance. And God hasn't just given those to us. He's given it to people in developing countries too. Because if you look at Africa and Southeast Asia, leaving China out of the picture, they don't have coal and gas and oil. They literally have 6% of the world's resources, which is, you know, pathetic compared to what we have here in the United States and the Middle East and Europe. So we are already doing this transition, but we just have to speed it up. And then the second thing we have to do is to prepare for the changes that are already coming, because when we see these risks changing, we need to prepare for them to make sure that we're all going to be okay. And so those are kind of the two big picture things. But in terms of what you or I could do as people, my favorite website is something called climatecaretakers.org. So it's just climatecaretakers.org. And it is an online Christian community of Christians all around the U.S. who want to act on this issue. And so every month, Climate Caretakers sends you this email where they say, all right, here's the one thing that you can do this month to make a difference. And sometimes it's something physical, like replacing your light bulbs with LEDs that you can get at Walmart. Sometimes it's something like, you know, calling or talking to somebody or having a conversation about it, or something like that. But we're doing it all together in community as Christians. And I love that because I feel like that is what we as Christians are supposed to do. We are designed to be part of the body of Christ, to work in community with each other, to express God's love to each other and to the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. There's the whole, what I call the mission statement of the Bible, which is what God says to Abraham, through you all nations will be blessed. And that idea that, you know, as Christians, we kind of adopt that mission. We're supposed to bless the world. We're supposed to work together to be a blessing to the rest of the world rather than whatever the alternative is.
Exactly. Yes. So, I mean, you know, it starts at something as basic as saying, you know what? Yes, climate really is changing. In every single other country in the entire world, the majority of people say, yeah, this thing is real. And you can go to Africa and you can talk to your brothers and sisters, believers who live in Africa or live up in Alaska or live in, you know, Southeast Asia. And you can say, hey, have you seen things changing? And they'll say, yes. And even here where we live, I was just standing at the door to pick up my little child from Sunday school the other day. And this guy who goes to church with me came up to me and said, hey, he said, do you feel like our weather's getting weirder here in Texas? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, we always see, you know, heat and drought and flood and cold, but it's getting more extreme. And he looked at me and goes, I knew it. Because he said, I've lived here all my life and things really are getting different. We see it. And so, as my husband says, you know, a thermometer isn't Democrat or Republican. God's creation does not tell us something different depending on how we vote. The reality is that God's creation is crying out and telling us something is happening. It is running a fever. And in a way, as a climate scientist, I sort of feel like a physician of the planet. I'm the one who's running all the scans, doing all the tests, and I'm saying, look, there is a problem. And if we act now, we can avoid the worst of the impacts. But if we put this thing off a couple more decades, we're going to be in serious trouble.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're talking about, like, the fact that we can kind of observe this change happening around us. What about, you know, the people who are like, well, we just had a really cold winter, so therefore climate change isn't happening or global warming isn't happening?
I know. That's the number one question that I get between about November and April is, it's cold outside, you know, how can climate be changing? And it's kind of like, imagine if you're on the Titanic and you're like up on the end and you'd be like, well, the Titanic can't be sinking because my end just went 200 feet up in the air. So it's all relative. It's all relative. Here's the funny thing, though. So I'm a scientist, right? And I study the science. I study what God's creation is telling us. But I've come to the point where I really believe that if we agree on the solutions, I don't care what we think about the science. If we agree that clean energy is the way of the future, and it isn't just, I should add, it isn't just because wind and solar and tidal energy are good for, you know, are good for the planet. They're also good for us. You know, per megawatt hour of new electricity here in Texas, where I live, wind and solar gives us 8 times more jobs than natural gas or oil. And also, whenever we burn coal or gas or oil, it produces a lot of air pollution, like all that, you know, particulates and smog and all that toxic stuff. What people don't realize is that here in the United States, on average, every single year, 200,000 people are dying just from air pollution, just from the impacts of breathing all that stuff in and the effect it has on our lungs. I mean, 200,000 people. And around the world, it's about 5.5 million people every year. And most of those people are the people who can't afford to buy a house in a nice area. So they live beside the freeway, or they live beside the factory, or they live in a place where, you know, their water is contaminated, or where the air they breathe is bad, or they live in Beijing, which cuts 5 years off your life just living there alone. So, I mean, as Christians, we have to say, this is not the way God intended us to live. God did not intend us to get our energy from sources that literally kill 200,000 people a year. And those people are the poor and the vulnerable people right here. Our neighbors in the places where we live. So there's lots of good reasons to go for wind and solar, not just because developing countries have it in abundance, but because right here at home, it's good for our economy, and it's also good for people who are suffering today.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, if we're wrong about the climate science,
yes,
then what's the worst that happens? We've transitioned to clean energy sources that improve our lives and our society and our cars and all kinds of stuff.
Exactly. That is the best argument. Like, so what if we're wrong about the science? There's all kinds of other win-win-wins. Yes. Right.
I like to think periodically, isn't it interesting that there's a giant battery in the sky? It's amazing that we actually do so much, in a sense, like convoluted work to get energy when we can see a gigantic source of energy, just by looking out the window.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the sun is going to be there as long as our planet is habitable. Right. It is never going to run out on us. And God gave it to us. And God also gave us the brains to do something about this thing. I mean, when I first started to kind of make the connections between what I was studying and what I believed, which I have to say, university was very instrumental in that because their whole focus is on integrating your scholarship with your faith. When I first started to make those connections, I got online on Amazon. I ordered the Green Bible. So it's, you know, there's the red Bible, the words of Jesus, and there's the green Bible where they, you know, where they highlight all the verses that have to do with creation and all that. So I was thinking to myself, well, you know, maybe this is going to be one of my favorite verses. But over the years, the more I've gotten into working in this issue and the more people I've talked to about it, I realized that my favorite verse has nothing to do with the green Bible, and it probably isn't even green in the Bible. My favorite verse is in Timothy, where it says that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but has given us a spirit of love, of power to get stuff done, and a sound mind. Isn't that amazing? So when we hear these reactions, which we often do to climate change or to global warming or to, you know, to clean energy, a lot of these reactions are driven by fear, or they're driven by anger with fear underneath. And as a Christian, I just find it absolutely amazing that we have this litmus test given to us by God. It's 2 Timothy 1:7 is the exact verse. Mm-hmm. We have this litmus test that if it is fear underlying the message we're receiving, it is not coming from God. If it is love, if it is power, and this is what I love, if it's a sound mind, if it makes sense, if it's logical, that is coming from God.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's such a powerful thing. And I think that applies to so many aspects of kind of Christian engagement with the world, is that if it's coming from a position of fear, that's not about the kingdom of God, right? That's not where God's work is. But if it's coming from a position of hope and confidence and kind of the fruits of the spirit, then that's really where we should be headed, right? Like that's a signal that this is the kind of stuff that we should be doing.
Exactly. Yes.
So I think you currently have a PBS series going on right now. Is that right?
I do. I have this PBS Digital Studios series, which is not on television. It's all online. You can find it at globalweirdingseries.com, or you can find it on my Facebook page, which is just my name, Catherine Hayhill. And every other week, we put out a new episode. Each episode is just about 5 minutes long. It's designed to start conversations and to be shared on social media, on Facebook or Twitter, or even you can text it to somebody. And every episode tackles a new myth. And so the first episode tackles the myth of only certain types of people care about climate change. So if I, you know, if I'm already a liberal, if I already vote Democrat, if I hug trees, if I eat granola, you know, then I care about climate change. But if I'm not that type of person, then I don't. Mm. And I think that's a very dangerous myth that we've bought into because, you know, personally, I feel that as a Christian, with the responsibilities that God has given us and with the love that God has put in our heart for people as well as for his creation, then we're the ones who should be at the front of the line on this issue, not dragging our heels at the back. We're exactly the type of people who should care. So that's what our first video is about. And then our second video, we kind of had some fun. We said, the myth is that climate science is this thing that scientists invented relatively recently to figure out, you know, how to line our pockets with government grants. And that one isn't true either. So you have to watch the video to find out why it isn't. So globalweirdingseries.com is where you can find the videos. And we're definitely having some fun with them.
Yeah, that's cool. So where does the term weirding indicator, where did that come from?
It is a play on global warming in different ways. One of the biggest ways that we, you and I, are seeing these changes on our planet, we're not actually observing the change in global average temperature. I mean, global average temperature is about as stable as the human body, and it's gone up about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit. And so, you know, if our own body temperature goes up 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit, we're like, that's kind of concerning. You know, you want to keep an eye on it, not sure, you know, when to head to the hospital. So in the same way, our global average temperature has gone up 1.5 degrees. But I mean, you know, between the room that you're sitting in right now and the next room, there's probably like a 5 degree temperature difference. So we don't feel that. But what we do feel is we feel that our weather is getting weirder. I mean, if you think about the place you live or the place where you used to live, where you know the weather, stuff is getting different. Like spring is arriving earlier. Summer is longer and hotter. When I was talking to one of our local television meteorologists, and he was saying, look, he's like, I've been doing this for 30 years. I used to be able to predict exactly what was going to happen. Our weather's getting more unpredictable now. And so that's where the weirding kind of comes from. But then our series also gets into other stuff. It gets into politics and religion and ideology, because we've gotten to this point, which I think is really weird, where the number one predictor of what we as people think about climate change, if you go across the whole United States and you say, what do you think about climate change? The number one predictor of our opinion is not how much we know about science. It's not how much we believe the Bible. It's not how much we think it, you know, being a good steward is important. The number one predictor is where we fall on the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, as my husband says, you know, a thermometer's not Democrat or Republican. So why on earth has what God's creation is telling us become this political issue? That is weird.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. And anytime you have this kind of connection of political thought and religious thought and scientific thought, you do end up with some weird things, I think.
Yes.
And and you have to wonder, like, why is the direction of influence going from, you know, politics to religion to science rather than, you know, maybe the other way around, right?
Yes. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where I feel like for some of us, our statement of faith is being written, first of all, by our politics and only second by the Bible. And when the Bible and our ideology comes into conflict, we're going with our ideology instead of the Bible. And it's just like, is that not, again, weird?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Are there any big things that you think kind of historically set us down this track? Or is it just kind of a strange circumstance we find ourselves in?
Well, I think that, I mean, I'm no historian, but, you know, a couple of decades ago, back in the 80s, there was a very strong and concerted effort to really put Christians only on one side of the political spectrum. And the dividing issue really was abortion, the sanctity of life. Mm-hmm. So if you believe in the sanctity of life, you vote Republican. And if you're okay with abortions, you vote Democrat. And that was kind of the dividing line. But as my colleague Mitch Hescock says, Mitch is a pastor and he is the head of the Evangelical Environmental Network. As Mitch says, life does not end at birth. And if we really are pro-life, then we have to be pro-life from conception until death.
Right.
And again, when you look at burning fossil fuels, killing 200,000 people a year in the United States alone, when you look at the impacts of climate change on people in developing countries who can already barely afford to feed their family, and then when food prices double due to a drought, I mean, that's catastrophe. People can starve, or they can lose their homes in the type of flooding disasters we've seen increasing in frequency in recent decades. So really, being pro-life is caring about people all throughout, you know, our stage of growth, and caring about climate change is being pro-life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we see different kinds of projections and, you know, kind of scenarios about the future and about what's going to happen. What is your opinion about those projections? Are we, you know, like, are every continent, is it just going to be flooded in 20 years or like underwater or what, you know, is it, what's the kind of timeline or what are we really looking at? And I guess how much, you know, how much can we influence that stuff right now?
So one of the best ways to think about this issue of climate change is to compare it to smoking. So we know, you know, if we've been smoking for decades already, a certain amount of damage is irreversible.
Yeah.
I mean, if we've been lighting up every day for years, there's a certain amount of damage that we are not going to be able to undo. But at the same time, we know that the best time to stop smoking was yesterday.
Yeah.
And the next best time is today. And the next best time after that is tomorrow.
Right.
And we know that if we stop smoking, we will avoid some of the worst impacts no matter when we stop. And that really is a similar situation. We have been smoking, essentially, burning coal and gas and oil since the Industrial Revolution. And it has brought us enormous benefits. I mean, we wouldn't even be talking today if it were not for the miracle of the internet and electricity and all kinds of technology we take for granted. So the Industrial Revolution was a really good thing. It raised the quality of our life. It provided tremendous health benefits to us and to people in developing countries. And it really brought us a lot of good things. And we have to now, given those many blessings we've received, we have to now recognize that, hey, the way we get our energy today is really dirty. It's really outdated. It's the equivalent of driving the Model T Ford and using the party telephone line today, which we don't do. And God has given us new sources of energy that we can use to replace those old sources. And so that's really the situation we're in today. Some amount of change is inevitable. We're looking at a few feet of sea level rise this century. We're not looking at the whole planet being flooded. People often say, well, God promised Noah that never again would he flood the entire world. Well, no, he won't flood the entire world. But we will flood our coastlines. And the reason why we care about this is because we have 7.5 billion people on the planet.
Yeah.
So if sea level were rising due to natural causes, as it has in the past, you know, we always have had natural reasons why climate has changed in the past. If it were rising 3 or 4 feet or even 5 or 10 feet, like 1,000 years ago, and you lived, you know, in New Orleans or New York or Mumbai or Shanghai, you know, you just pick up your tent and move. Who cares, right? But today we have 2/3 of the world's biggest cities within just a few feet of sea level. And it is going to be really hard, although they're working on it, it is going to be really hard to prepare Miami and to prepare New York for this change. But they're working on it because they have the resources and they have the knowledge. What about those cities in developing countries where people live in shanty towns and they absolutely do not have the resources to prepare for what's happening in the future? They can barely cope with today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's a lot to think about. I was in a one of our recent interviews, we talked to Science Mike McCarg, and he was saying he was talking about the you know, like, when are we going to start paying attention to this, or when are we going to start caring about it? And he was kind of pessimistically, you know, saying, you know, it may not be until we see Miami start sinking beneath the waves or whatever.
Yeah. But to a certain extent, I mean, that's already happening. Like, in Miami, they are already seeing what they call sunny day flooding. In other words, up to this point, flooding happened when there was a storm, right? But today, with sea level rise and king tides on top of that, when those two coincide, they're seeing flooding on days when the sun is shining. I mean, it's already beginning.
Yeah, so that's that idea, you know, like, kind of wait until we really start to get the fear, and it kind of goes back to the thought of, like, what should we be driven by? You know, should we are we going to have to wait for till we start to be really afraid for our you know, our important cities, or are we going to kind of take the proactive stance of caring about it now?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. God has given us, again, God has given us a spirit of love, power, and a sound mind. And it is absolutely crystal clear. It's been crystal clear for scientists, you wouldn't believe this, for over 150 years, that the reason why climate is changing today is not a natural cycle anymore. If it were a natural cycle, we'd be getting cooler right now. We're not. We're warming. Yeah. It really is humans. We really are responsible. And it really impacts us humans, especially people who are poor and vulnerable. And so the time to act is now. It's kind of like, you know, it's like as if you were a smoker and you were, you know, you felt like you were coughing a bit more than normal. So you go to the doctor and the doctor says, you know what? You do have some concerns. I can see the damage. Now is the time to make the smart decision. We can use our sound mind and we can use our love, because we are making that decision not just for ourselves, not just for our families. We're making that decision for every living person on the planet. It's the time to think about others and to use our sound mind to make good decisions.
Yeah. Wow. So taking a hard right angle, I noticed in your I noticed in your Twitter bio that one of the things you say on there is first in line for cloning. So I'm very, very interested in that. So tell me about that.
Oh, that is meant to be a joke. Twitter is definitely meant to be a bit more on the lighthearted side. It's because I get so many people saying, oh, could you do this? Could you do that? Could you speak to this group? Could you, you know, write for this? And the reason why I think is not because we lack any climate scientists, because, you know, we have a couple of thousand climate scientists around the world, but we lack climate scientists who, number one, are not just Christians, because I actually know quite a few Christian climate scientists, but who are willing to stand up and publicly say, I am a Christian. I do believe that God created and gave this amazing world to us. And I think that because we are Christians, we need to do something about it. So I would love to have 1,000 clones saying that all across the United States and around the world, because I really do believe that we have every single value we need to care about climate change. As Christians, we believe that God has given us a new heart, and God is renewing our mind progressively as we go along. Right. And God has given us everything we need to love Him and love others. And all we have to do is connect the dots between our new hearts and between this issue of climate change.
Yeah. I love it. So, and I hope we do sign you up for cloning sometime soon. Would love to see that. Thanks for talking through this with me. I'll put links to your PBS series. I'll put links to all this. What's the just best way that people can follow your current work?
Absolutely. So my website is just my name, katherinehayhoe.com. And in my posts page, I usually keep up to date stuff. But I am very active on my Facebook page and on my Twitter account. So you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. Again, it's just my name, Katherine Hayhoe. And I look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll do it. And thanks so much, Katherine. Hope to talk again in the future.
Yes, I would love that. Thank you.